We have a complicated relationship with sexuality in our culture. We certainly play up the sex in music and video and advertising, but then we have some reluctance to talk frankly to our kids about it. Our guest this hour says we absolutely should be talking to our kids about sex, and there should be an emphasis on permission. Consent-based sex education is what Dr. Wes Crenshaw calls it. He's working on a book by that title. Dr. Wes is a busy guy, a therapist working in Kansas with a lot of kids and teens. He is an author of several books and a frequent guest on TV and radio shows, including this one. Wes Crenshaw, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
It is always really great to be here.
So this project, as I understand, is not yours alone. Tell us about your co-pilot.
Well, this is Katie Gio, and Katie and I wrote the Double Take newspaper column for a year, about 3 years ago. And Katie is now a sophomore at Gambier, Ohio, at Kenyon College. And earlier this year, I began to realize that books for parents to talk with kids and work with kids around sexuality were both not large in number and not very modern, not very up to date. And by that, I mean they have to be written in about the last 2 or 3 years just to be current. And so I asked Katie if she would be interested in being the 19-year-old voice in this book, and I would be the old parent-aged voice, and we would put that project together as kind of a dual sound, a kind of stereo sound.
Why do you say any books would have to be written in the last 2 or 3 years to be current? I mean, obviously the basic human body structures haven't changed, but obviously this is about more than the body.
Yeah, an excellent point. So what has been apparent to me over the last 10 years, and I've done this for like 22, 3 years now, is that things are kind of on a rapidly escalating curve in terms of learning curve, in terms of how kids are consuming and experiencing sexuality and thinking about sexuality. And a lot of this really is connected to the internet and to social media, because kids are just interconnected 24/7 nowadays to each other and to infinite amounts of information online. And so really the internet has become America's number one sex educator. Well, with all that information out there, kids learn quickly and the culture turns over. They talk to each other about things. And there are many examples, but perhaps one of the most notable ones and biggest sea changes has been in attitudes towards gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgendered people and relationships. And kids who are identifying right now as gay or lesbian have almost nothing in common with people who are 23 or 4 years old. Their experience is so different. And that's true in almost every aspect of sexuality today. Differences aren't generational. They're measured in just a few years. And so if you're looking at a book that was written 10 years ago, and there were some good ones written 10 years ago, they're just almost have nothing to do with what it is to be a teenager or a young adult today in terms of sexuality.
So it's not just that the sexuality itself is different from what it was 10 years ago with the prevalence of the internet, the ubiquity of the internet, but also that you're saying that there are very big differences between people obviously when you get past the age of 50, you get, oh, they're all kids, but you know, no, it sounds like between 17 and 23, there's a huge difference.
There is. And for example, because I've always worked with teens and young adults, that sort of brought with it topics of sexuality. So I didn't really ever get into this business to do sex therapy or sexuality education. That just came with the territory. And so when I talk to kids in their 20s about, I call them kids, when I talk to them about what it's like to be straight or gay or bisexual, or what they now refer to as pansexual, their experience is so different than what I hear from kids who are 13, 14, or 15. We have kids now as young as 12 and 13 that come in, say, identifying. I had one today, a consult was brought to my office, about a kid in fifth grade identifying as gay. And even I was a little surprised that a fifth grader was aware of that language and knowledgeable. But this is information that's everywhere for kids today, and it's just a significant change. And I don't mean to just dwell upon gay and lesbian, bisexual issues. I'm just using it as an example that everything in sexuality is more present and is changing in how people perceive it and consume it more quickly today than really ever before.
When you say consent-based sex education, I mean, what age are you shooting for is the major question here?
Well, that's a great question. My view, and really this isn't a very radical view in the area of sex education and psychology today, is that the discussion of sexuality and the idea that we believe is key to that is the idea of consent has to start with little kids. Now, if you have two groups of people at this point, the group that's like, oh, yeah, wow, that makes sense, and the group that's like, oh, my gosh, no, little kids, you don't tell them about sex. Well, of course, the conversation you have with elementary age students or preschoolers, of course, that's different. And where people pick up on this and get upset about it is trying to propose that somehow you would have this 14-year-old version conversation with a 5-year-old. Of course, that's not what anybody is proposing. But for example, the idea of consent, you can begin to teach that with your pets and your kids. We have cats, and from the time our kids were 4 or 5 years old, well, younger than that, really, 3, if the cat doesn't want to be held, we say the cat is saying no. That's consent. That's when you begin.
Ah, that's a good way to get it, too, because, yes, cats in particular are going to give a kid a bloody face if he keeps holding on. So good lessons there. We have more to talk about, obviously, with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. His latest concept we're talking about here is consent-based sex education. We'll come back and talk more about that and take phone calls and emails from you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest once again is Dr. Wes Crenshaw, therapist in Kansas, who has put together a lot of books and has been on the media a lot talking about concepts in mental health that work for kids and teens and adolescents and people in general. Today we're talking about consent-based sex education. He and Katie Gio are working on a book about this, hopefully for publication later this year. You can join us as we talk about the concepts of consent-based sex education now. Join us at 800-838-3760 around the listening area. It's 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You'd mentioned, Dr. West, there are a bunch of good books out there, but they do quickly get dated. How much, if at all, is consent a part of sex education up until this point?
It is becoming much more important right now, and I think we're not really on the cutting edge of it as a concept, but I think we're on the cutting edge of it in integrating it into the way parents talk to kids about sex. And so, you know, a part of this is driven, unfortunately, by the growing awareness of an issue that isn't new at all, and that is sexual assault on college campuses. And, you know, I have my business in a major university town, the University of Kansas. And so we've been keenly aware of that problem for many years. And the old standard idea in teaching consent was, you know, no means no. And that just isn't remotely adequate to really fully understand what consent is about. And what we've moved now towards is the idea that only yes means yes. Well, that's pretty cool. And there's this idea of enthusiastic consent, the idea that you're really very clearly ready to do this and into it. But we believe there's more to it than that. We have what we call emotional consent. And this is the idea that young people have really thought through the decision and made an authentic choice about what they want to do. And too often, over the course of my clinical experience, I see kids not having done that. And what we've done historically as parents and in formal education is to teach this abstinence message of just say no or some version of that. And not only are kids prone to hear just say no and go out and do whatever the opposite of no is, biologically predetermined to do that, but it doesn't engage them in a conversation where they understand about sex and the choice to have sex as an authentic decision. It really is a yes or no choice. And so they grow up with this kind of narrow model, and they aren't prepared to really think through about this idea we have of emotional consent, that you are choosing within yourself what you mean to do.
You mentioned earlier about just the way that with the internet around, that kids are getting their sex education from the internet. It's clearly pretty easy for them to do that. I wonder what we know in the way of statistics about whether kids are having sex any earlier, or if they just learn about it and do it no earlier or later than they did in years past.
It's such an interesting area of study. I believe strongly, and we could go into great depth about this someday, that the statistics on almost everything teenagers do that is considered socially questionable are bad statistics. For example, we know that by the time someone is 19 years of age, that 75% have had sex. And we know that by about 16, about half of all teenagers in any given high school have had sex. Well, here's what those statistics don't tell you. And this is, research can only take us so far. You have to have really relationships with kids and clinical or parental contact with them to know what to interpret. And what really is happening there is that those statistics, if we assume they're even accurate self-reports, let's just assume for a minute that all kids who take those surveys tell the truth. I doubt that's true, but let's say it is.
Okay.
50%, the 50% who say they have been sexually active, you cannot assume the other 50% are choosing not to be sexually active. What I find in high schools is that there is the group of kids who are sexually active and the group of kids who want to be sexually active. And then there's a tiny number who are, by a moral or religious code or a personal decision, they've really thought it through, or based on sheer anxiety, are not wanting to be sexually active. That is a tiny percentage. So when parents come to me and they say, well, how do we know if our kids are sexually active? I say, don't even ask that question. What you need to assume is that at some time they will be, and assume the statistics are in the favor of the child being sexually active and work from that model. So the stats really don't tell us everything we need to know.
Good point to bring up there. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about consent-based sex education. I have to wonder what your view is of the overall state of sex education nationally, and then you can get a little more local for yourself, because while you're in a college town, which I know is a bit more liberal, the state of Kansas is very culturally conservative.
I was hoping you hadn't watched the news about that. So, okay. In general, I believe that there are these two schools of thought about sex education, and one of them is the abstinence model, and one of them is what's called comprehensive sex education. And the problem with the abstinence model, and by all means, if callers want to call in and argue this, I'm prepared to do so with love and gentility, but it is as if we are landing on a different planet. The abstinence model makes no connection to teenagers at all. We have a film on our Kickstarter on my website that we had kids talk about this. None of them even knew what abstinence education was. And one of them said she thought it would work, but only if you had a religious belief. Well, that's very accurate. If you have a high moral attachment to the idea of abstinence as a part of your religious beliefs, then there's a higher chance that's going to be meaningful. But for most kids right now, that's not what connects to them. On the other hand, the comprehensive sex education promoters, some of them don't actually realize what comprehensive sex education is. And it isn't just teaching kids to wear a condom. That's mini sex education. It is by the standards of what it is to be comprehensive in sex education is what the Unitarians do. They have a whole training model for their youth in the Unitarian faith that is explicit in its descriptions of what sex is about, how to have relationships, how to be sexually involved, so on and so on. That's never going to be taught in the schools. It's never going to happen. And I don't think as parents, we probably really want teachers that we don't know teaching that level of comprehensive sex education. So the debate between these two things, and by the way, my sex education friends argue with me about this. They don't agree with me. I think the debate about this comprehensive versus abstinence sex education is a false debate. It's just about politics. It falls to parents to be the ones to really communicate these messages, or to find someone, if they can't do it, who can communicate these important messages to kids, because public schools really cannot do that.
Which raises the question then, I mean, who are the best people? And I assume this is one of the reasons that you got Katie Guillot as your co-author on the book about consent-based sex education, is that it seems like no teen really wants to take this information from any adult.
Yeah, it's so funny. The film that we have on the Kickstarter, it's a 7-minute film that we had these two teenagers in Florida go out and interview kids about sex. And they both were really surprised at how open their peers were about this topic. They didn't have too much trouble getting on camera and talking about it. And their parents released them to do so, the ones who were under 18. And the question that they had the hardest time with, and I mean, it's funny when you watch the film how hard a time they have with the question, is what would you like to tell your parents about teen sexuality? They had no idea what to say. And this is a good illustration of how hard it is to, or how hard it's been for us to really get a good conversation started between kids and parents. This topic ought to not be this scary. I know it's easy for me to say, I do it all the time. But if you can talk about your favorite sports team with your kids, if you practice enough and get comfortable with the topic yourself and start when kids are younger, they're not going to know that you're supposed to be embarrassed about this. They're going to think it's just like talking about the Kansas Jayhawks, as we do around here all the time.
Quite a bit. And I went to the University of Missouri, so there's the natural rivalry there, but we won't get into that.
You and I always have to argue about
that. That's right. Not even in the same league anymore. Anyway, back to the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about consent-based sex education with Dr. Wes Crenshaw, who has a practice in Lawrence, Kansas, and has written several books as well. Frequent guest here on the Exchange. You can join us as we talk about consent-based sex education. 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area. 800-838-3760. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Ann and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. I don't know about other societies, but it appears to me that in our society, there is a widespread belief among males that they deserve to have sex. And therefore, when they're refused by a female, they think that there's something wrong with the female, and that they may even ignore that refusal because of this strong belief that they deserve to have sex. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann.
That is such a great point. So let me tell you a little story about that. I did not fully realize the power of what the caller just said, even in doing what I do, and about 80% of my caseload are teen girls and young women. Even I did not fully appreciate what she said until I had one of my kids come in, and she was a junior in high school, and she appreciates that I tell this story. And she was kind of upset, and she said, I ran into a guy, he was like my boyfriend in eighth grade, he's a couple years older than I am, and I saw him at a forensics tournament the other day, and he came in, and he's like, hey, and he put his arm around me and was like hugging on me. And this is a girl who does not like to be touched that way. It's just a part of her sensory issues. It isn't sexual. It isn't anything like that. It just doesn't feel good for her, and she cringed. And she said to him, please don't do that. Now, think for a second. That's pretty courageous to say that. And he said, why not? And she said, because I just don't like to be touched like that. And he said, well, how come? Did something happen in your childhood?
Wow.
And she went on a little, and she started to cry while she's telling me the story. And she said, Wes, I ended up in the bathroom sobbing. And I said to her, still not completely understanding, I said to her, well, what was upsetting to you about it? You understand he wasn't trying to hurt you or to be sexual with you. She said, I know, but I just felt like my no didn't count for anything. And that is the moment it hit me, for the biggest hit it could give me. That's what it feels like to be a girl in that situation, to feel smaller than this person, to feel like she is not able to say to him, I just don't want to do that. And this is a story that has nothing to do with sex any more than hugging the cat I was describing before the break has to do with sex. It has to do with what we get to say other people do to us. And I think young women really feel, just as the caller said, that guys feel very entitled to touch them in any way that they deem appropriate. And if anyone objects, there's something wrong with the girl. And that's a problem. We need to teach our sons not to be that guy.
Huh, interesting. A real denial of the other person's power and denying them respect, really, for having a position. I don't want to be touched.
Yeah, and when I tell that story to girls, not a one of them does not know what I am talking about. Everybody identifies with that story.
Wes Crenshaw, Dr. Wes, is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking consent-based sex education. Jenny in Roseburg comes back to the cat story. She says, well, I'm in the oh my goodness of course camp. This is a really good paradigm shift. When you talked about cats, I could see how this could also bleed into teaching children about bullying and concepts of human kindness in general. It allows you to address a great deal that this is about respect, not just about sex.
Yeah, this is why I love public radio, and I do it all over the country, because people say smart stuff like that. This is sex is nothing but another mechanism or method by which we express relationships to people. It's a special method. I don't want to minimize its importance, but it's another way of showing kindness and connection to somebody. And so with kids, we want to begin to teach them how to treat others just as people or cats, how to treat them. Cat, you know, our thing in the house is that cats have free will and they get to choose if they're being held or not. Well, you know, that's just very clearly a metaphor for how we treat other people. The other thing parents need to do, and it's true with parents of girls, but it's especially true with parents of boys, is parents spend too much time complaining and grounding people and such for not loading the dishwasher. And what they really need to do is to use their power to teach kids and to cause kids to treat others well. And so if you ask my son, who's 11, what will happen to him if I ever find out he's mistreating a dating partner or a friend, he does the sign where you cut off their head, you know, pulls the thing under. Yeah, he knows that this is the worst thing he could get in trouble for, is treating other people unethically. And that then naturally translates into the dating and sexual relationships if you keep working it that way.
How do you overcome the standard objection, though, when you start talking about the whole, even going back to the basic of no means no and respecting the other person's wishes and consent can be revoked. We'll get into this later. But just the basic idea that you slow the process down, you kill the mood by having to go get all those permissions.
And this is an integral part of my work, because I'm not talking to kids in a laboratory or in an ideal scenario. I'm talking to kids who are living in that world. And so if you say, you know, to give you one of the nuances of this, if you're a 17-year-old girl and you tell a guy, there's no chance you're ever going to have sex with me, you're probably not going to be in the dating pool. It's that simple. and people can be disappointed about that, or they can be angry about it or not like it. But in general, that is true. Are there exceptions? Of course. But on average, that is the case. So they're in the real world, and they're having to make decisions. Is it important to be in the dating pool? Should I be having sex just to be in the dating pool? You know, is that really consent, or is that just a kind of social coercion? These are the real life conversations they have to have. And so in the moment that happens, that's the worst time for kids to be trying to make a decision about what they want to do. And so what I do and what I encourage parents to do is to build a model with kids that they're able to know when and how to say yes to sex. Because if they don't know how to say yes, they're going to probably do it without really emotional consent.
So how to say no and how to say yes. Very important. Exactly. To get into the two sides of that. Dr. Wes Crenshaw, our guest, consent-based sex education, our topic. We'll come back and talk more with him and take more of your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is once again Dr. Wes Crenshaw, a therapist working in Kansas with many kids and teens. He's written several books, is a frequent guest on TV and radio shows. We're glad to have him back here talking about his latest project, which is a book on consent-based sex education, which he hopes to bring out later this year with co-author Katie Guillo. She is 19 years old and much closer to the age group trying to be reached by this material. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the many, many issues in sex education currently, in the future, and particularly where it concerns consent. 800-838-3760 throughout our listening area. 800-838-3760 by email jx@jeffnet.org. Call here from Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Wes.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to bring up the idea in education of our young people, the idea of teaching them to be able to discern truth, first in themselves, so that they know when something really resonates with their own inner core, and secondly, when they're confronted in a social situation with some suggestion that they partake in something they don't want to partake in, to be able to discern beyond the words that person may be speaking in their invitation to them. Because, for example, the boy who said, "Oh, is that your early childhood, or did you have some sort of issue in your childhood?" He was taunting her and also trying to get her to go into his way of thinking, when his whole motivation was to see if he could get somewhere with her. And she was traumatized by that because she didn't know her own inner core well enough. You know, she was uncomfortable or something. She just didn't know how to respond in a way that truthfully upheld herself and, cut through and was able to see through his words to where his motivations really were. And I believe, the education is important because they're so inexperienced. Kids are just so inexperienced, and it's so easy for them to be influenced.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Julie. Appreciate that, Wes.
That's a great point, Julie, and I really want to talk in depth about it. Let me clarify a couple things about the story, just in fairness to both the girl and the guy. I think the fact that she said no to him so clearly really is indicative of her having a pretty strong sense of that internal orientation. And that's really what we mean when we say emotional consent. She was doing her job in that situation. The what happened to him, it wasn't so much he was trying to, get busy with her there. It's he covered up his ego. He had done something that was a social error. And young men have a very hard time with that. And instead of him, all he had to do in that situation was back up and say, "I am so sorry. I did not realize I offended you." And she'd have been his best friend. She wanted to be. But he had to cover his ego, and it had to be something wrong with her, just like our first caller said. She must be messed up that she doesn't want him hugging on her. So that she did okay. The problem is being able to say, don't touch me like that, probably isn't going to get a parade for you. He's not going to step back and say, oh, my gosh, you are amazing that you can stand up to me. And what we have to help kids understand is that that doesn't mean that they shouldn't continue to stand up and do what's right. The second part of that very good point is the only way to teach kids to have a self-orientation, like you described, a self-orientation so that they say, this is who I am. It's called being well-differentiated. This is who I am. This is what I believe, and I'm going to go with that view of the world, is to not try to control their sexuality as teens. If you are one of the parents, I work with them all the time, who grounds the person because they find them making out or they catch them having sex, you know, that's always a bad concept, catching someone having sex, and you drop the atomic bomb on them, what you're teaching your child, especially daughters, is to have an other orientation in her sexuality. And parents will say, well, I've got to do that to protect him. The statistics tell us that does not protect anyone. It does not prevent kids from having problematic sexual encounters. And if we teach kids instead to make an authentic choice to say, tell me about your decision in wanting to be on birth control or wanting to begin to be sexually active, I just want to understand your thinking. You engage them in an actual dialogue where they're having to think it through and say, you know, is this what I want to do or isn't it? And parents have to be able to pull back their emotional reactivity and to realize sometimes the answer, often answer, is going to be yes, they do want to. And if the parent facilitates the thinking, then down the road, the child is more able to make good informed consent decisions instead of being boxed into a corner because they've been taught your body doesn't belong to you, it belongs to me. And that's a big part of what we're trying to teach.
Well, about the time you said emotional reactivity, I was thinking that there's a difference between saying, tell me what your thinking is, and screaming at the top of your lungs, what are you thinking? Because I think that's the way
you got it.
Yeah, so that's a really tricky thing for a parent to find that place, though, where they can calm down enough to say, okay, let's have this conversation without the kid then going off, right?
You're absolutely right. And what we have developed in the book as we're building this project with our Kickstarter, we're developing this idea of the PLUS model, P-L-U-S. And the PLUS model stands for pause, listen, understand, and be sex positive. And this isn't like a big liberal idea here. This is just communication skills. And pause is the first thing, is exactly the point you're making, that the first thing you do when you encounter a difficult, what we call the difficult situation sexually, whether it's birth control or coming out as gay or transgendered, or whether you find that they're using pornography or any of a variety of issues, the very first thing you must do is pause. There has never been a good conversation with a teenager or anyone else that came out of a highly emotional reaction. And if you cannot pause and say things that you really mean to say, graciously exit and go practice in front of a mirror until you can. And then the listening, the understanding. When we say understand in the PLUS model, we don't just mean understand the teenager. As a critical part of this, we mean understand yourself. What is triggering you here? We think it too often, we don't realize why we're being triggered by some incident. And if you think through, why is it upset me that I found pornography in my daughter's computer? What is really hitting me about that? What am I scared of? Think that through before you respond. And then the idea of being sex positive, that sounds super groovy. All it really means is that being sex positive is to do what you mean to do what you intend to do. And too often today, teenagers say they're sex positive, but when you drill down into it, they aren't necessarily doing what they mean to do. They're doing what they think is cool and rebellious, or what they think is the social norm or in the dating pool. Being sex positive means doing what you mean to do.
All right, here's another call from Tony in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. We're talking consent-based sex education.
Yeah, I've got a comment to make. I'm enjoying the fact that he's actually teaching his males no means no.
You bet.
Because the last two guys I dated, and that's when I stopped dating, I told them no. They couldn't hear it. It's out of their head. They don't hear it. I had to threaten them with date rape to get them to back off.
Well, that is a very sad, sad situation, and I wish I had.
Oops, you're there.
All too frequently, okay. And
you're there. We're good.
Yeah, I hear stories like that all too frequently at all different ages, and to be very fair, I must say I absolutely have numerous examples of where young women did not respect consent. The most common example is in, you know, the dating environment is alcohol driven, and more than those stock cars are alcohol driven. It is a drinking environment. And there are young women who are very, for lack of a better word, predatory. They are in the dating pool to win, and they do not have any problem undercutting other girls in the dating pool. And one all too common behavior is to advance themselves sexually with a guy who's in a dating relationship with someone else after they've been drinking heavily. And this goes for both genders. People need to realize that with the consumption of alcohol, consent cannot be obtained. It cannot be obtained. California recently codified that. And so I teach the kids I'm with, and it's hard ground because they love to drink, but I teach the kids I see, if that person is past the legal limit for drinking, they cannot consent, and you need to back off.
You know, one of the things when, Tony, thanks for the call. I appreciate it very much. The idea that even getting to the point of saying no leads me to think about things in relationships where if you're trying certain practices that might threaten one party or the other, you come up with safe words and things like that. No should be a safe word. But the fact is that if you're so new in a relationship or if you met somebody that night at the party, the bar, whatever, you don't really have the language of the relationship.
So true. So very true. And, you know, in a more ideal world, in the world that I think is sexually optimal, you have a relationship with the person you're having sex with. In today's world of teens and young adults, that is not a foregone conclusion. And it makes conversation about the sexual decisions you're making that much more important if you don't have a feel for the person or don't have a relationship with them. And my bias continues to be, when you don't have that relationship, you're better off waiting until you do. But I can wish for that all I want, and it's not a key part of young people's dating patterns right now. So that makes communication and the idea of consent that much more important. And we have to be, you know, talking about what does it really mean to say yes to yourself and to others.
And Wes, what are you teaching in your materials about consent once given and the ability to withdraw?
Well, this is particularly salient to the point you were making a second ago about different kinds of sexual practices. And so you may be in a relationship with someone and you're consenting to this set of practices with the extensive level of explicit online content we have now. Young people are exposed to a astounding array of sexual practices that some of them wouldn't have even thought of before. But today, there's a huge menu they're offered, and you have a balance in any situation between trying new things and then being able to say no to those, and you know, having a operating relationship with a partner where you are trying to experiment. And that becomes a very complicated process. But what we teach people is you really have to be meaning to do what you're doing, not just doing it for someone else, and that at any point that you don't want to do that anymore, you absolutely have a right to say no. Is it better to know that going into the situation? Sure. But that's not going to happen sometimes.
Got about a minute left. Let's take a call from Ryan and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Wes Crenshaw.
Hi, thank you. It's been very interesting, and I'm enjoying the conversation a lot. My question, I teach at a university, and the alcohol and consent question, I understand completely the doctor's opinion, and I share it, but I think that sex and alcohol have gone together for so long, and especially in the college life, and
yes,
telling people that when they're drinking, that sex is just off the table. I find it's going to be an impossible sell.
I don't disagree with you. Believe me, I struggle with this. Let me just add to it. You're right that this historically has been a problem. I actually think the amount of drinking kids do now is higher than it's ever been. But nevertheless, trying to convince them of this idea that sex is off the table is pretty difficult. To the extent that it is the rare college girl I see right now, young women in college, who has not had a low consent sexual encounter. When we say low consent sexual encounter in this book, we mean they can't really explain whether they meant to do it or not. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. They don't remember, to the point where I had a person tell me the other day, she said, I don't know all the people I've had sex with. And I said, right, I'm not surprised. She goes, no, you don't understand. I don't even know who they were. That's a low consent sexual encounter replicated again and again.
All right, well, obviously much more to talk about on another day. Consent-based sex education, perhaps it'll come out in book form later this year. There is a Kickstarter out there, Dr. Wes Crenshaw putting it together with Katie Guillot. Dr. Wes has been our guest once again. Always good to talk to you, Wes.
It is great. We'll do it again.
All right, take care.